Mental Health Monday
on Radio City Talk
with Mick Coyle.
Tackling the stigma.
Radio City Talk.
Mental Health Monday for another Monday. My name's Mick and welcome to the programme. We've got a couple of really interesting guests in the studio who are going to be talking about the work that they do, and talk is all a part of it. Change Talks. We've got Sam Tyra and Lindsay Irwin with us in the studio. Sam, Lindsay, thank you both for your time.
Thank you.
This comes with a warning of Lancashire accents. So I'm really going to ham mine up. You guys are based in Lancashire at the moment, but the work that you're doing is, well, very important, and I get the sense that, you know, spreading to areas like Mersey, Side Manchester, yeah, is not going to be far away. First and foremost, the idea behind Change Talks. Sam, do you want to talk us through the idea itself?
Yeah, so I guess Change Talks started around a year ago, where basically the reasons why I set it up was my own personal story of suffering with depression, anxiety around the age of 17. Sort of overcome that at the age of 21. I won't go into detail about it, but I basically wanted to give back to the community in Lancashire. So I had the idea to put together this event called Change Talks, which just to raise awareness to mental health issues and talk about my own experiences. This event was where I met Lindsay as well, wasn't it? Lindsay was one of the speakers. And I got approached at the event, after the event, by Lancashire Care. And they said they'd like to help support set up an early intervention prevention programme for schools. So I approached Lindsay, who then agreed to do it with me, and we've designed a 6-week program which has taken off really, really quickly. I guess it all comes down to my own personal lived experience of why it's actually started.
In terms of that lived experience, mm-hmm. In itself is absolutely invaluable, but you guys are young people as well. When you're looking to tell those stories, does it help that you guys are young, that you are young, fresh faces, you look like the kind of people that you would be speaking to within the schools?
Yeah, definitely. I think it's had a massive impact, really, especially on our engagement with the young people. I think they can feel they relate to us a lot better. They've said that kind of like they see us as peers. We're on their level, a lot more casual, and they confide in us a little bit more than what they would other services that they've had in the past.
When you go into those sort of environments and you speak to young people, is there, obviously you're telling your story, mm-hmm. do you get a sense of what they're going through as well? When they come back to you, do they say things to you that makes you think, oh, right, this is worthwhile, because quite clearly these thoughts are going through young people's heads?
Yeah, every time. Every programme, every talk that we do, we get pupils coming up to us at the end and thanking us, opening up about some of their stuff. It's really normalising the conversation for them in school and making them realise that they're not on their own. So it has had a huge impact, and we've discovered a lot along the way. Pupils are opening up to us about stuff that they wouldn't tell the parents or teachers, and they wouldn't tell any mental health professionals, because we're going in as Sam and Lindsay, as your mate. It's the things that we found out are unbelievable. Some of it quite shocking.
Yeah, can you give us a sense of what, obviously not betraying any particular trust in any one individual, give us a sense of what those sorts of things are, the sort of things that young people are having to deal with?
So I guess some young people are, I think one of the main issues at the moment is definitely body image. On a lot of people will approach us after the sessions and say how much they hate themselves, how much they hate how they look. Just to give you an example from one school of why it actually started as well, was a young girl was basically called fat repeatedly by a group of lads in her year, and she'd approached us and basically said that she now can't take her clothes off in front of her family or her friends, getting a bikini, because she now feels so self-conscious, and she's actually developed an eating disorder from this as well.
I guess that's one of the sort of the stark realities of it, that whenever people hear about projects and schemes, and yours is Change Talks, and it comes, you know, with the branding and things like that. But at the heart of it, you know, Lindsay, we've got real people, real human beings who've got real problems as well. Have you been surprised by how open and young people are to talk about maybe some of their issues?
Yeah, definitely. I think for the young people in the schools, this has been a long time coming. They've been desperate for anybody to talk to. They've kind of said that they've tried to speak to teachers and members of staff within the school, and there almost isn't that level of understanding. They're not on their level, and then as a result they end up feeling even more isolated. The support isn't there, so as soon as we come in, it's almost like word vomit. They just want to get it out. They need somebody to speak to, and they're so relieved when they see us, aren't they?
And does that then feedback, do the teachers then come to you and say, right, is there anything that we need to work on? Do you then sort of create that relationship?
It's something we're definitely trying to do. It's up and coming.
We'll have to feedback quite a few things. It's very unique what we do. I think because we go in and we're very open, it's created an environment where what they tell us is so different. But we need to educate the teachers and the parents as well, because I don't think they truly understand what the school atmosphere is like for them at the moment.
Change Talks is the name of the organisation. Santara and Lindsay Irwin with us in the studio. In terms of how in demand you are, do schools bring you in as a service? So they'll invite you in. And then what sort of groups do you work with? What sort of size of groups?
It varies, doesn't it? Massively, depending on each school's needs, really. I mean, we've been to some schools where it's mixed age range and mixed gender, people that have had a history of struggling and people who haven't experienced any mental health problems. And then other schools are completely different, aren't they?
It's normally about the class group that we aim for is 25 to 30 pupils. I think it works better when it's just a generic form group, because then we're reaching people that the school might not be aware of. If you target pupils, they're going to feel stigmatised and labelled straight away. And I think that when we've talked in some of the other schools that we've been in previously, when we've just a normal form group, we've had people reach out that people had no idea that they were self-harming or anything, especially lads as well. So that's what we try and aim for, really.
Yeah, definitely. It's just getting that understanding throughout all the peer groups as well. You know, it's not just those that are struggling that need to be educated. It's those that aren't struggling, in case they ever are, and how they can also support their friends and family too. Mm.
So I was going to ask you about this one. So there might be young people who are, you know, Sam, use your example there, when your problem started when you were 17. There might be people who are 14 thinking, oh, here we go, here's another thing to sit through there. How do you engage with young people so that you can say, look, this might not be you now, but it might be you in the future? You know, this is one of the things we touch on a lot with the programme, when we say to people, look, if this isn't affecting you, it might be affecting somebody very close to you, and you might be the person who has to have that intervention.
Yeah.
And I guess with young people, you're almost going to say, look, listen to this stuff because it's important. Mm-hmm. Keep it to the back of your mind. But how do you make that connection with those people?
I think the connection's there straight away, because we ask right at the start, how many of you know someone that is struggling with a mental health issue? Every pupil puts a hand up. Every pupil. So I think they're aware of it, and I think they're aware that they need to understand it, aren't they? So, and especially with us talking openly, it kind of shows, you know, it can happen to anyone at any time, because with our backgrounds, I was never expecting it to happen to me, and it kind of shocks them. With my background of playing sport to a high level, I think, oh, no, how did it happen there? So it kind of makes them aware that it could happen to anyone at any time, but they all know someone struggling with a mental health issue.
And as well as before we go into schools, we'll give out questionnaires, so we get an idea of kind of the gist of what the young people are interested in before we go in, so we can make sure we target our talks and deliver it in a way that suits that individual group as well. So it's very person-centred, our approach, which again is why we're so unique.
Is there anything going on in young people's lives at the moment which the sort of the adult world isn't capable of getting their heads around at the moment? Often decisions are made politically, made by people in their 50s and 60s, you know, in London rather than based, you know, in and around the regions. What are the things that are going on in young people's lives at the moment that are causing them concern, that are making them worried, depressed, anxious, maybe related to stress, maybe causing, you know, self-harm? What are those sort of things in your experience that you've seen?
I think social media plays a massive part in it, definitely.
Huge.
And that isn't just in terms of looking at their peers and what the peers are portraying online. It's also they've lost that sense of identity. They almost are no longer aware on what their peer group and what their community is, because they're no longer following people. When I first got on, it was Bebo and Pixo when social media first started for myself, and it was just people I knew. It wasn't the Kardashians and the Jenners and this wide variety of people that are then confusing you what a real life is. We didn't have that. And then it's also the other thing is the online bullying that comes through social media.
Anonymous chat lines.
Yeah.
So they're getting some very dangerous stuff that's going on.
Online dating for children kind of thing. It's bizarre.
Yeah, they're downloading apps that are anonymous chat lines where they're actually talking to older people and they're getting inappropriate pictures sent to them. It's really worrying. There's some really bad games out there at the moment and apps. Also, compassion and kindness seems to have gone. They are not nice to each other at all. The bullying is awful,
again,
isn't
probably
it?
Through social media, though. It's that lack of personalisation. Yeah. We're creating a very depersonalised society because they no longer know how to communicate.
It's interesting, isn't it, where we think we're the most connected we've ever been, but we're actually the most disconnected.
Completely. Even down to small sort of conversational cues that we would pick up on naturally, like eye contact. These young people are saying eye contact's awkward straight away. They don't look at people when they speak because for them, that's no longer interaction. It's quite...
Talking over an online platform, over a text, rather than face-to-face.
Because I guess you're dealing with the first generation that have been absolutely native in the digital world, that everything has always been digital, that Facebook isn't something new and exciting, or are you going to sign up? It's just you automatically, you're almost signed up to that as well, to the point where if there were anonymous chat rooms there, and I'd be interested to hear some more about the things that go on there, as an adult, you would go, well, obviously, this is potentially dangerous. But in a child that's grown up in a world where conversations can take place anywhere online and it's online, so therefore there's an element of safety to it, when quite clearly there isn't. They've not learnt the sort of skill set that an adult would have. That leaves you in a very, very vulnerable position, doesn't it?
Yeah, because I think a lot of them, especially in the older years, realise the danger, but what they say is, because they do it, I do it. So we go, if you've been sent something inappropriate and you realise it's bad for you, why do you continue to do it? Well, everyone else has got it. But another example to refer to something, they play a game called Hashtag Ops on Me. Mm. So basically what they do, they post a picture of themselves on online platforms and they get everyone else to comment on them in the year. So that's just basically putting themselves up for trial to be slated by the rest of the year.
And that's kind of the aim of it, to say as many kind of like negative things. It would be a selfie or a full body image of whatever, and people to post as many comments.
To bully you.
Yeah.
But they all do it.
And what's the hashtag? The hashtag?
Hashtag ops on me, opinion on me, basically.
The thing that worries you about that is that you think, well, what is it that young people feel, or why people feel the need to do that?
Justification, isn't
value.
It?
Value. You want to feel valued, don't they?
Gratification. And as well, I suppose for some people, it could potentially be a form of self-harm as well. It's, you know, to be told that you're worthless or that you're ugly or something. It's a form of self-harm. If that's their core values and how they feel, then they almost search for that. It's bizarre how it all works.
I'm going to look for a positive on that one. Do young people ever say, is it used as a positive thing? Opinions on me, you look great.
Not
you're
very
wonderful.
Often.
You're my best mate. You always stand by me. No,
that'd be more often. Pictures that they post on Instagram or Snapchat. They get confidence.
The friends will say that. Yeah. But other than that, the rest of the year that basically are commenting and saying very insulting things like kill yourself and cut yourself. We've seen it in every school.
It's concerning.
I mean, that's deeply concerning, isn't it? Particularly because there seems to be almost a normality to that.
Mm-hmm.
And these are, what ages? So these will be...
From year 7 onwards.
Yeah, so 11 to 16 mainly.
Which is... you know, so important to have those conversations. And obviously, I didn't sort of ask you, was it social media? I waited actually for you to say social media, because sometimes I think from an adult point of view, you almost think, oh, it'll be social media, that'll be to blame. But actually what you've said there is that social media is playing such
a huge contribution.
They recognise that, though. Yeah, they do recognise it.
But they can't remove it.
No.
They've grown up being addicted to instant gratification, so the likes are giving them dopamine. So that actually, in theory, that you know, they struggle to work towards something, delayed gratification, because they've got that instant buzz from a like. So when the likes stop, they're feeling less valued, and if they don't get as many likes on a photo, they start thinking, oh, I'm not as loved, I'm not as valued.
It goes back to that, how they've grew up with communication, though, because that is how, for them, all their lives, you do give people gratification. You know, you text happy birthday, you don't really send cards anymore. Oh, I miss you, it's nice to hear from you, you're saying over text. It's all communication now throughout the life has been on that platform.
Their value's off a number.
Yeah, so that's how it's been throughout life for them now. Their life is electronic.
Which is sad.
Yeah, it is. And absolutely, the other thing that's sad about it is the generation before that kind of thought, oh, this is a new and exciting, slightly odd gimmick, have actually created the environment where young people have naturally picked up all of those skills without really much of the sense of what it all actually means, the value and the reality that comes behind it as well, which I guess is a failure of the generation that I'm in to sort of let that by. You know, I've got a four-year-old now who will ask me for a mobile phone at some point. But I always think that it's almost going to come with a reality check that if somebody is posting something, they're posting it for a reason. What is that reason? Is it a good reason? Is it a bad reason? And do you need to partake in that, sort of knowing what those reasons are? Plus, there's also individually, people always talk about the Kardashians. They're cynical in terms of what they're doing from a business point of view. I probably think they're not totally mean-spirited in what they're doing. But actually, it's become part of an environment, hasn't it, where people then have copied that and manipulated that and kind of gone, well, if she's doing absolutely nothing outside of making a sex tape and then some hair and makeup things and becoming a social media star, then I can do that too, or I can copy that too, and there's value to be perceived in that. Whereas actually, there's not a great deal of value with the best will in the world to her.
They're becoming idols to young people. Yeah, why aren't people's idols people that are doing amazing things in the world?
When I was growing up, my idols, like my mother or my grandmother, that people that were within your community that you could actually idolise and work towards achieving whatever it is that you know that you appreciate that they do. You can't do that anymore in this generation. They're looking at people on these online platforms.
Love Island.
Yeah, that aren't even living the life that you think they're living and don't look how that we think they look.
Yeah. It's a false reality, isn't it?
Yeah, completely.
Mental Health Monday with Mick Coyle.
On Radio City Talk.
We've got the team behind Change Talks in the studio for this week's Mental Health Monday. Sam Tyra and Lindsay Irwin. We're hearing about the work that they do in schools and some of the things that they hear from young people within schools as well. Sam and Lindsay, you both got nursing backgrounds, right? So, Lindsay, you're a nurse at the moment. Sam, you were working in nursing.
Yes, correct.
As well. Lindsay, tell us about the work that you do.
So I'm a mental health nurse. I work on a low secure CAMHS ward, and I suppose to give a bit of understanding to that, what a low secure ward means is it's basically patients that are there for long term psychiatric care with a lot of complex trauma, attachment difficulties. We do see quite a lot of eating disorder traits, extreme self harm, and quite horrific lives, really. I've worked there just for over a year now. Mm. I love it. It's a strange job.
I imagine it's a tremendously rewarding job as well. And Sam, you were working in the nursing industry, the nursing profession as well.
Yep. I was a gastroenterology nurse, so I looked after people, alcoholics, and we'd often get attempted suicide in as well. So for, I think actually before I started Change Talks, one of the other reasons behind it was for about a 3 to 4 month period, we was averaging like 3 to 4 attempted suicides a week from the age of 16 up to 82, I think the oldest was. So that was kind of another reason why I really wanted to try and make a difference, especially around that area.
With the backgrounds and the experience that you've got, how important is it then, as we see last week, Theresa May announcing, you know, extra funding for people to go into schools, greater provision, particularly within schools and dealing with young people and mental health? How important is it that actually the people who do that are the people who are trained? Yeah, I imagine if you speak to any schools, they'll go, look, there'll be the geography teacher who's got a bit of downtime. They'll go, read this pamphlet, show this video, and then go and teach the kids about mental health, and then they put a big tick and go, yep, there we go, tick, we've done that one.
Yeah,
there's a danger with that, isn't there?
Yeah,
there definitely is. It's a big hole really within the education system. So they are having things in some schools like community studies and
life skills,
those kind of lessons, and they're delivered by like your French teachers and history teachers and the likes. But as a qualified, it is extremely important that the people that are delivering these know what they're talking about and know how to address these subjects sensitively. I mean, speaking from an example to me, which is extremely troubling, we get a lot of patients who are having psychotic symptoms, and by that I mean that they're hearing voices. But what we are actually finding is that young people these days, it's actually their internal voice, it's their thoughts, it's their feelings, it's their outlook on life. And because they don't have an outlet, they don't have the coping strategies, that they're not tuned into who they are. So their own thoughts have to come across as a psychotic voice. And that to me is extremely troubling. So, and the skills that we teach them on the ward are DBT skills. And as I've been learning more about DBT at work, I'm kind of just going, well, that was just what I learned growing up. Those are the skills my mum taught me. And surely it is a school's responsibility, if something has not been delivered in the home, to ensure that every child has equal access to that education.
DBT stands for?
Dialectical Behavioural Therapy. It's like similar to CBT, but it's much more in-depth and long-term.
CBT, cognitive.
Yes, sorry,
right,
for the...
I think what works well with our approach as well is Lindsay's a mental health nurse, obviously I'm a general, but what works well when we deliver it is I'm very, very open about my personal experience, and then Lindsay's got the professional approach as well. Mm-hmm. So it complements each other. But we never present as the professionals,
no,
do we?
No, never.
That's the uniqueness of it, I just think.
What mistakes might schools be making, do you think, if they do send in the French teacher and the geography teacher, who are doing it with the best will in the world?
Yeah, of course.
You could go in there absolutely with the keenest, you know, ability to want to make this happen. What kind of things might they be doing wrong?
I think really, well, what we gathered from today was just played videos, didn't they? Which can trigger people, because some of the videos are very, very heavy. And I think the follow-up after a session as well, I don't think they're qualified to actually know what to say to the pupil afterwards.
No.
And I think that there's still that sort of man up and get on with it mentality, isn't there, in a lot of teachers?
Yeah.
So I think that being qualified, or at least knowing where to point people in the right direction, would really help, but I don't think a lot of them really know how to do that.
When you share your story, Sam, in terms of talking about, you know, who you are, where you're from, people look at you and think, here's a, you know, fit, young, good-looking guy. Oh, hang on a minute, he's got problems. Mm. He's had problems and he's managed to find a way through those problems. What sort of reaction do you get from that? What do people say to you about that? Do they go, right, I need to be where you are. How did you get to where you are?
So I guess quite a lot of nice compliments said. I don't want to blow me on trumpet here.
It's actually really good on one of the slides that we have, isn't it? On one of the presentations, there's a group picture of us all.
Yeah.
And we kind of say, which one in this group do you think has mental health problems? And there's me and you, maybe like nine other people, isn't there? And we go, and they were
all been there.
Oh, I don't know, none of them. It's actually all of us. Yeah. We've all struggled. Have we got three heads?
I think the main thing is, especially with talking about it, it gives people hope to, you know, to make you realise that, you know, I hit rock bottom, and actually, you know, if they're at rock bottom, there's always a light at the end of the tunnel. It's about showing them the way.
In terms of them taking responsibility as well, part responsibility because they're only kids, for their friends as well and the well-being of their friends. What are you able to say about that? Because, of course, kids are in the best position to see if their friends have got issues, but in many ways they're in the worst position to be able to do anything about it or have the authority to do anything about it. How do you do that in terms of signposting for them what they can do, maybe what they need to do
to keep
an eye out for the friend, but actually to make sure that then their friends are aware that they're very much, you know, requiring adult intervention maybe?
Yeah, I think really there's only so much you can tell the pupils to do for one another. It's about encouraging them to be compassionate and be consistent as well. Yeah. I think that's the huge thing to keep encouraging, because as much as you want to try and help someone or help your friend, there's only so much you can do. It's about educating them towards that and saying just keep asking if they're okay. You know, get them to talk to your parents, get them to talk to a teacher and be that, you know, that person that's with them throughout.
It's teaching those coping strategies as well,
yeah.
Developing those coping strategies that you can do together, understanding mindfulness and activities along those lines that they can enjoy together as friendship groups and individually.
Can I ask you about the parents as well? Because I presume when people feedback to you, you might be able to go, all right, well, your particular background means it's lent itself to issues or problems. Mm-hmm. But I guess you've had people come to you who've got stable homes, mums and dads and everything like that.
Yeah.
What sort of roles do parents need to play on this one? When they're listening to this thinking, I didn't know there was, you know, chat rooms that you can go on.
Yeah.
I didn't realise that there could be grown men sending my daughter naked photos of themselves or asking for naked photos to be sent. I didn't know about those things. What do parents need to do outside of that thing of going, right, now we're all going to sit down in a family meeting and talk about what's happening on your mobile phone, which can be totally awkward for everybody?
I think parents really need to open up the conversation. I think ideally we'd like to talk to parents as well, because with the school offer, we're trying to do a joint offer where we're talking to the teachers and the parents so that we can liaise this back to them, because parents aren't aware of it.
No.
Teachers aren't aware of it. They don't have any clue, do they?
No, and I suppose that young people are struggling to speak to the parents, especially if they are suicidal. You know, how do you tell the person, and this is a quote from somebody that we've seen this week, how would I tell my mother who brought me into this world that I want to take myself out of it?
Yeah.
So there is that massive, that emotional connection to maybe not wanting to discuss it. But in regards to things like self-harm and social media usage and drugs and alcohol and sexual exploitation, in regards to sending naked photos to peers or people older or younger, I think it's just about sitting down and always having it as an open conversation, regardless of the age of your child.
Yeah.
I know I always grew up with a very open relationship with my mother, and this is the conversation I have at a dinner table. And that's why when I started struggling, I was able to speak to my mum and my family, because it was never something that wasn't able to be discussed.
Yeah.
It shouldn't just be discussed when it becomes a problem, because by then it's already there.
Yeah. Mm.
But that doesn't mean at that point there's no hope. You can still sit down and have a conversation and build that relationship up at any point.
I definitely think as kids are growing up, parents need to set the example of put the phone down, sit down and talk.
100%.
That needs to be like a regular routine, I feel, in families' lives. Because, you know, a lot of adults now will sit there on the mobile phones in front of the kids, so they're learning from them. And then it's creating that environment where they don't feel like they can talk. So that space needs to be created where things can be talked about openly.
Change Talks, the website changetalks.org.uk. Change Talks, Change Talk. Oh, I'm going to get this right. changetalks.org.uk. But I guess you find that talk changes things. And actually, you put talk very much within your branding, if you like. That talking, the communication around this is absolutely crucial.
It is, yeah.
No matter if you're young or old, actually the ability to talk to one another, have those emotional interactions as well, face to face, eye contact to eye contact, I guess that makes a huge difference. And that's absolutely part of the solution, even though it's a really naff and old-fashioned thing to do now, to actually talk to another human being. When you don't, we seem to have developed the technology, haven't we, where we don't need to see anyone anymore, we don't need to talk to anyone anymore, and we've suddenly then realising, and it's the first generation now realising, We actually do need to make those connections. We actually do need to have those conversations, and those old-fashioned ways of doing things will be part of solutions for people. In terms of people signing up and getting on board, you work in schools, youth groups, do you do things like that as well?
Can do anything,
we want to do in the future, definitely. We're very open to whatever an area needs, really.
This will take off. Definitely. It has taken off. We're open to anything. Sports clubs, youth centres, schools, higher education. We also do events for the community as well, so we've got a real mix.
Good stuff. Sam and Lindsay, who else is on the team, by the way?
It's mainly just us two, isn't it?
Yeah, you guys.
And I know you've got support from various different organisations as well. Lancashire Mind,
Lancashire Mind have just actually did the previous week. They run some sessions for us under the school programme. Lancashire Care, Wildlife Trust, people like that.
Excellent stuff as well. And if there are organisations maybe in Liverpool, because Liverpool is absolutely super duper when it comes to this, if they want to get in contact with you, you're based in Lancashire, but obviously you've got the Edgehill connections, Ormskirk.
Yeah.
You're never that far away.
No, definitely not. Just tell them to email through the website and we'll get back in touch.
We can be wherever we're needed, can't we?
Good stuff. It's great to see the work that you're doing as well.
Thank you very much.
You're both young people and you're both making a connection in a way which I think other people couldn't do, certainly. Stuffy old people like me going in there going, and now we're going to talk about mental health. Who knows what mental health is, which would be the way I do it very badly.
All dressed in white coats.
Absolutely. I think I grew up right. I don't mind saying this now. When I was doing my journalism training, one of the first things you learn is never ask anybody how they feel. Because it's like a boring question. I'm now made a career of actually asking people how they feel. It's the worst bit of advice I've ever been given. The most important question you will ever ask anybody is how they feel. I absolutely think it's the most important. And then for people, oh, no, you shouldn't ask that one. You think, well, what if you want to know how they feel? And what actually, if they express how they feel, actually helps them as well as you?
Yeah. What if you're the only person that's asked them how they feel that day?
Turn the whole day around.
Exactly. See, you should have been doing my course. No wonder I only got a 2-1. Thank you both for your time. Really appreciate it. Changetalks.org.uk is the website. You can find out more information about Sam and Lindsay as well via the organisation. And there's contact details on there too. The website, again, changetalks.org.uk.
Mental Health Monday on Radio City Talk with Mick Coyle.
Radio City Talk.